Hello, we're back with 10 Minutes of Talmud, and today we're going to be talking about truth and peace. Yeah. Let's say our blessing and be on our way. Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav, tzivanu la'asok b'divrei Torah. We are in Yerushalmi Tractate Megillah, Mishnah 1, Halacha 1. If you're in your Schottenstein, that's 1b2. We've been talking about how the date for reading the Megillah slides all over the place. You know, it's amazing, right? Because they get so specific about when to say the morning Shema, when to say the evening Shema, when you can quit eating chametz for Passover. But man, when it comes to Purim, let the good times roll. but they only want you to give the charity on the 14th and the 15th because that's when the poor are expecting it, and they only want the feasting on the 14th and the 15th. Who knows, maybe a coalition of restaurateurs in the ancient days had a lobbying effect on that. You never know. Anyway. All right, so the Gemara is now going to be continuing in this question. Vayu Ela Likriah. So let the 14th and the 15th be the only days that you read the Megillah. Ve'elu Lisudah. But then let the feasting be the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, whatever, right? Why are we going for this idea that the reverse is true, that the Megillah is read on the earlier days and the feast must be held on the 14th and 15th? Actually, a decent question. Rabbi Chelbo, Rav Chuna, b'shem Rav. So Rabbi Chelbo and Rav Chuna in the name of Rav. V'hayamim ha'ele nizkarim v'na'asim. And these days should be remembered and done and observed. Nizkarim b'kri'ah. They are remembered by reading the Megillah. Logical, right? How do you know what you're celebrating? You read it in the Megillah, and it tells you the story of Purim. The Na'asim, and you do them, how? Bisudah, with a feast. And Schottenstein has a nice note here. By mentioning that remembering before the observing, the verse implies that the reading of the Megillah precedes the feast. It is thus evident that the earlier dates were intended for the Megillah reading. I think that's a little too neatly done, but it's still nice. It's still nice. Okay? So now we're going to move into some other areas of the reading of the Purim scroll. Zot omeret. So this means to say, Shemigilat Esther nitna lihadresh. This is to say that the Megillah of Esther is to be expounded. Lehidaresh, it's the nifal of drash, to expound, to make a midrash on it. Okay, and they're going to support that. Rabbi Chelbo, Rabbi Yassab Hashem, Rabbi Elazar. Boy, Rabbi Chelbo sure shows up a lot in this tractate, doesn't he? He's a kind of Purim kind of guy. Ne'amar Khan, it is stated here in reference to the Megillah, Divrei Shalom Be'emet, words of peace and truth. Woo, love it. That's Esther 9, verse 30. Ne'amar Lahalan, and then it's also said, Emet Kenei V'al Timkor, purchase truth, but don't sell it. All right, that's Proverbs 23, verse 23. The verse is explained as follows. If necessary, one should pay someone to teach him Torah, purchase truth. But one should not charge tuition to others. Don't sell truth. A person should not say that that since he had to pay to study Torah, he will charge for teaching it. That's a really great idealistic way of looking at it. And as long as, you know, you have some big supporters in the community, God bless you, you can go ahead and do that way. But you have to wonder about the guys who wrote these footnotes for Art Scroll. how the heck are they getting paid? It's a question. Actually, it's a really important question, because depending on how they're getting paid, in other words, who do they think is going to buy the books, or who are the donors who made the books possible in the first place, it's going to depend, a lot hangs on those questions. Very little goes out there absolutely for free. So, you know, it's just an interesting question. On the other hand, I know I'm drifting here a little, but it's really an important question. One of the things that people object to in the Jewish community is that you step in the door, and instead of being made to feel welcome and kind of take it for a test drive and people want to get to know you, the first thing that happens when you decide you want to join a congregation is, how much money do you make? Let's see your tax returns. We're going to assess you this much dues. And you can see where, in terms of marketing, we don't do as well as some of those Christian megachurches, right? Man, you come in there, they're not asking you for anything. They're just thrilled for you to be there. You know, they're, and everything is how do you say it? It's like customer service, right? So if these mega churches are Neiman Marcus, I think that sometimes synagogues might be the Department of Motor Vehicles. You know what I'm saying? So I think one of the things that we have to learn to do is be a little less DMV and a little more Neiman Marcus. It's a thought. All right, we'll pick up here tomorrow. Talk to you then. Bye.